Monte Carlo, and Ross Chastain won the NASCAR Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. From your Michigan News Source Sports Desk, I'm Brock Palmbush.
Tomorrow is happening right now. Today, more than ever, the world needs safe, secure, sustainable, and affordable sources of energy. That's why Enbridge is advancing new technologies to reduce emissions, like carbon capture and hydrogen power. By putting in the work today, we're bridging to a cleaner energy future. Tomorrow is on. Enbridge. Life takes energy.
Pure Michigan water has never been more important than it is today. You can find your Pure Michigan water experts at Wolverine Water. Wolverine Water has been installing Michigan-made products for almost 75 years now. Hometown products and hometown service provided by your friends and neighbors at Wolverine Water since 1947. How about that for a cool drink of water? Wolverine Water. I've been a customer for over 20 years, too. If you're ready for the very best, you're ready for Wolverine Water. WolverineWaterSystems.com.
If you're nearing 65, you're probably being bombarded by insurance companies by mail and phone, trying to sell you this product or that. Laura Bogdan has personally looked after the needs of seniors, taking the time to explain how Medicare works and other benefits you may not even be aware of. Laura is ready to help you today.
I'm Laura Bogdan. Call me today, 231-264-6890, 231-264-6890.
And now, a special Memorial Day remembrance program, a tribute to heroes.
Hello, and welcome to the special Memorial Day salute program, where our U.S. military veterans are telling us their war stories to remind us all that freedom is not free. I've been doing these military veteran interviews now for over 25 years, and it has been a tremendous blessing to me to have this great opportunity. Our next story is an Air Force veteran telling us about his years fighting in Vietnam as a Doppler inertia and radar technician, about his part in the Tet Offensive in 1968 and his bout with Agent Orange, which still affects him today. Here is retired Staff Sergeant B.J. Field.
I'm a native-born Texan. I grew up in the Dallas area. I went to college, and I received a draft notice in June of 1965. And in August, I went down to the Air Force recruiter and asked to sign up. And the Air Force recruiter took me upstairs to the Selective Service Bureau, got my information, and I took the battery of tests, had physical, was sent to Lackland Air Force Base, small amount of basic training, and then I got orders for a school. And my school was 52 weeks long. It was aircraft radar and inertial navigation, which was a highly technical school at the time. I learned radar and went to Dyess Air Force Base after school on B-52s. I was a Doppler radar and radar altimeter technician. When I signed up, I had no idea. I did not have an option to choose anything. I just went in and took whatever they offered. And due to the fact that my brain had a little bit of knowledge in it, they gave me a very technical school, and I went through it real easily. Electronics has been very simple for me to understand. And so, therefore, when I went to the radar school, F-4 Phantoms were just coming into play. They came out in the early 60s, and their navigation system had an inertial nav system. It was a gyroscope. And after I was there for about 6 months, I volunteered for Vietnam. And it takes a while for all the paperwork to go through, so it wasn't until August of 67 that I got notice that I was going to Mountain Home Air Force Base in Idaho to learn side-looking radar on the RF-4C. And then I got orders for Vietnam, and I was stationed at Tan Sanut, which is right outside of Saigon. And when I got there at 67, and it was very comfortable in the beginning, except for rockets going off and being fired by the enemy and small arms fire and B-52 bombs not far away. You can tell when a B-52 is bombing because what you hear is a distant rumbling, like the hundreds of bombs that are going off at one time. The Tet Offensive of 1968 started in the early part of 68. What happened at the same hour in the morning, every station that had any United States service members was attacked all over the country, every one of them. It was a coordinated offensive by the North Vietnamese, Viet Cong, to disrupt and attack everywhere, everything. So that was a wake-up. Our base, in the process, was overrun. We were sent to our duty stations and issued M-16s, and we fired across the runway. And it lasted for about 10 days, so it was kind of a mess. Our base ran out of food because the runways were closed. We were issued sea rations, which I'd never eaten before. When it was over and we went to somewhat normalcy, we were still getting rocket attacks at night. A very good friend of mine was in a hangar on the second floor, and he walked to the top of the stairs, and a rocket hit the entrance to our hangar, and shrapnel separated his head from his body. So that was a very tough situation for me to go through. And that's the only person that was close to me that I dealt with while I was in Vietnam. Throughout my time in country, I saw thousands of dead Americans because I was at Tan Son Nhut, which is a major base. And every single day, there would be two or three C-141s, and they would load up flag-draped coffins. So I saw that every single day, a somber flight, a holy ground, as you might say. But I saw that every single day, so that really got into my brain heavily throughout the whole time. Since I had been there for so long, when August of 69 came around, I'd been in country for like 22 months, my first sergeant came to me and said, "You've been here a long time. Nixon wants to get rid of some people. Would you like to be discharged early?" And I said, "Yes, yes, I will." I was a technician and a line chief on RF-4Cs. So I would debrief a pilot that came in, download the equipment, and send it to a correlator. Correlator would come out with black and white film, and people could look at boat traffic up and down Vietnam. Our pilots would hit the air and they'd head south, come along the Mekong Delta on the ocean side. We want to see the traffic on the ocean and which tributaries boats go up. Most of our pilots flew at night or in bad weather. Radar doesn't care if it's light or dark. Radar doesn't care if it's raining or not. So a photographic reconnaissance plane could not photograph in cloudy weather. Yeah. They couldn't photograph at night. So that's where the RF-4C came in real handy, with that side-looking radar, because it was a mapping radar. It was made by Goodyear Aerospace, and we nicknamed it Rubber Radar because it was Goodyear Aerospace, you know, the blimps. The SR-71 was a reconnaissance. So reconnaissance is a big portion of the military. My deal was a side-looking radar that was a mapping device. It would take a picture of the land, the rivers, and the ocean to pick up boat traffic.
And then BJ told me something that I had not heard before.
How did you get to Agent Orange?
Agent Orange is a chemical, and it's sprayed like a fine mist, and that stuff would get in the air, and people had been dying of stuff, and the government fought it and fought it and fought it for years. When I came back from Vietnam in August of 69, by November, December, I had gone to the VA to claim problems. And when I was evaluated at the VA hospital, they told me that, well, you probably had that before you went in. So I was denied. So I never went back until about 15 years ago when people were saying, well, you need to go. They've changed a lot of that. Well, when I went, they asked me where I was stationed. I said, Vietnam. And the lady at the information desk said, oh, you need to go around to the Agent Orange section. So I went around there. And within 6 months, I had gotten 90% disability. And when I came down with Agent Orange cancer, I was bumped to 100%. I call my legs my combat injury because I have problems with my legs due to Agent Orange. When I got out of service, came back to Dallas, I went to Texas Instruments and applied for a job. When I came back, my boss said, would you go to Vietnam? And I said, yeah. And I wound up taking a top secret weapon system to Vietnam, the laser guided bomb. At the time, it was top secret. I stayed in the military industrial complex for a period of 8 years, the military and then TI.
At the end of our interview, I asked BJ if he prayed much when he was in Vietnam for God to keep him alive. He told me this.
I knew there was a God, but I never went to church since there was every kind of drug you can imagine over in Vietnam. Whatever, you know, all of it. I chose alcohol. Alcohol was my drug. And I came home as an alcoholic, and I spent 15 years fighting that devil, and I did it with the help of God.
My thanks to BJ for his service to our country and for being a true patriot. BJ Field is now fully retired and very active in his work for the Lord, and he tells everyone about Jesus. I'm taking a break now. Another interview will follow after these messages.
On this Memorial Day, we remember the great men and women who served our country and those still serving today to keep us safe and free. This day is more than just time off work or picnics or parades, shopping for the big sales, all good things, but they cause us to get off track as to why we have this special day. Memorial Day is a day to remember and honor those who gave us the right to be free. To get a copy of this Memorial Day program, a tribute to our heroes, you can visit our website at www.jerrystewartusa.com. And if you subscribe, you will get a free download of this program airing all across our great nation. Now, our website is a great way to spend quality time together as a family and learn the history of America. And on this program, you will hear the stories as told by the men and women who were there. Visit www.jerrystewartusa.com and subscribe to get your free download of a tribute to our heroes. Or you can call us at 817-995-4607 to find out more. God bless you, and let's keep moving forward with our prayers, with our concerns over the safety and the way our country is walking, and let us be praying for our president and all of our other leaders, that each of them will come to know that it is God who is our leader. We thank you, Lord. God bless you.
LegendarySystems.net now offers affordable remote tech support for your computer, the same service that large companies have been using for years. To discuss your needs and pricing, call us at 231-818-8349. Don't take your computer in for repairs. Let us do it remotely. Again, call us today at 231-818-8349.
In northern Michigan don't have to go far to get their firearm problem solved. Curtis Gunsmithing handles all gun work, adjustments, bluing, rebarreling, cleaning, and even FFL transfers. Need a stock refinished or some custom work done? How about a trigger job? That's right. Let the gun doctor, Tom Curtis of Curtis Gunsmithing, take care of old Betsy. She'll be in good hands. Call 231-347-3487. That's 347-3487. Curtis Gunsmithing of Petoskey.
At Royal Tire in Petoskey, we know that you've got things to do and places to go. And you need safe and reliable tires that will get you there and back every time. Tires like the Michelin Defender LTX or the Michelin Cross Climate 2. We believe in these tires so much, we put them on our own vehicles. So stop by Royal Tire today and let our tire experts find the right Michelin tire to keep you and your family safe. When you think tires, think Royal Tire in Petoskey.
Maybe you're looking to sell an old firearm that's been sitting around the house just collecting dust. Or maybe you've been thinking it's time to upgrade to a newer model or caliber. Either way, the place to go is Curtis Gunsmithing in Petoskey. Pistols, rifles, shotguns, they buy and sell pretty much anything that goes boom when you pull the trigger. Except rocket launchers, they don't buy or sell those. So if you're looking for a new firearm or just want to sell old Betsy, you're sure to get a fair price and friendly service to boot at Curtis Gunsmithing in Petoskey.
If you have pain in your back, neck, shoulders, hip, knees, wrists, or feet, Dr. Gary Willey's Chiropractic Services in Sheboygan has a robotic laser treatment for you. This technology takes away pain, inflammation, and promotes healing. Experience robotic laser pain relief at a special new customer price. Call us for fast relief Monday through Wednesday to learn more and to schedule an appointment at 231-627-4300. Again, 231-627-4300.
Do you have a fear of running out of money during retirement? Or maybe worried about another market crash as the one we experienced in 2008? I have solutions. Whether it's for education, family, retirement, gift giving, or simple protection of your hard-earned money, I have a number of contractual guaranteed payouts to choose from. Call Laura today at Bogdan Insurance, 231-264-6890. Again, 231-264-6890. Serving Northern Michigan since 1998.
Honored history of America, there are names that shine like beacons in the night. The patriots whose vision gave us meaning, who kept the lamp of freedom burning bright. In the long and honored history of America, there are those who paid the last and final price, who were called upon by chance or desperate circumstance to make the ultimate sacrifice.
Hello, I'm Jerry Stewart. Welcome back to this special Memorial Day program. In World War II, while the Allies were busy fighting fierce battles in Europe, equally fierce battles were being fought in the Pacific. But in the Pacific, Allied forces were fighting a different kind of soldier, the Japanese. And early in the war, the Japanese soldier built a reputation for being unmerciful and unwilling to surrender, even if it meant certain death. In fact, their very religion taught them that a good soldier would fight to his death and that surrender meant disgrace. If they were forced to choose, many Japanese soldiers would kill themselves before giving up. This made them a foe that could only be defeated by death. In August of 1942, the Japanese Empire had reached its height. They controlled a majority of islands stretching halfway across the Pacific. They seemed to be invincible. Allied leaders determined that the only way to break the Japanese hold was by a tactic called island hopping. They would attack certain key islands while passing others by. But this idea of hitting the Japanese straight on, landing a beach, and then fighting to secure a hold on the island was very hard and costly. In fact, many an American soldier would die before he even reached land. It would take a particular kind of soldier to fight this war, men who were specially trained to fight Japan's best. These special men were found in the Marines where groups called raiders were formed. These raiders were trained in all areas of war and killing. They were taught the martial arts and hand-to-hand combat, and only a very few were chosen. One of these chosen was Joe. This interview was the first time that Joe spoke publicly about his war experience, and so he asked me just to use his first name, Joe. In 1942, when the Japanese were winning the war, Joe was still in high school in Kansas. But as the war heated up, young men began to sign up for the draft. And one day, the Marine Draft Office received quite a surprise.
The whole football team that I played on back in Kansas, we decided we'd all go and join the Marine Corps at the same time.
But of all the boys who signed up for the Marines that day, only two were taken, and Joe was one of these. One of the big reasons was that Joe had already received some special training in his school.
They got a person to come in that was a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he started teaching jiu-jitsu in high school, and several of us boys took it.
After learning jiu-jitsu, he went on to judo and karate and taekwondo. So when Joe joined the Marines, he was a perfect candidate to be a raider. He was assigned to the 1st Marine Division and became a part of Carlson's Raiders, named after its leader.
Colonel Carlson was one rough person, and he taught us hard. He used every bit of natural abilities that we had.
Joe and the 1st Marine Division jumped from island to island. Their job was to secure a beach and hold it. Joe learned early that his martial arts training would save his life.
When I met a man face to face over in the South Pacific, we were too close to use any weapons. Couldn't even pull your knife. And so we went right into hand-to-hand combat. He was a real large man. I guess I won. I'm here.
Joe was hesitant to talk about many of his battles, but he was there at Guadalcanal, Iwo Jima. He was able to talk with me about one attack on the island of Peleliu. As 700 Marines and 7 landing crafts prepared to attack, Joe can still remember.
Before the gate dropped on the landing craft, you could hear the Japanese bullets hitting the plank. It was a steel, it was just probably 3/4 or a 1/2 inch thick steel. And you could hear, it just sounded like, oh, it's terrible.
Then, once the gate dropped, the men had to wade, sometimes swim to shore while being shot at. And many never made it.
Once you hit the beach, you went up the beach as fast as you possibly could to the first place you could get cover.
That day at Peleliu, the Marines were taking a terrible beating. The Japanese army was well fortified. They had machine guns up on the cliffs firing down on the Marines, and men were dying. Somebody had to stop those guns.
See, I got up underneath the cliff as much as I could, and I took a hand grenade and I threw it up, and they threw it back before it went off. And I remember pulling the pin on the second one, and I held it in my hand and threw it, and it went into